Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all thing Big Ten football. Excited doing this one remotely, but I have a little bit more equipment now, and actually I'm in control of the stream somehow. I don't know how that happened, but I'm going to make it look cool. We're going to move some things around.
I'm wearing 247. You can see it now.
Oh my gosh. Like this is like totally.
I know. Look at the big dog.
I'm going to put like things up on the screen.
Yep.
Stuff that David doesn't do because, you know, he's just not good at this stuff, but whatever. We're back. Excited to do a show. David, I even have the mixing board. Remotely. So I got the little setup here. So we can do a little more stuff. We have a voicemail we can get to. We have to recap what we did in week 6 and preview week 7. If you have questions, you can email us. We got a lot of emails. Big10cast, all spelled out, at gmail.com. You can also shoot us a text. I think we got like 5 text messages and 1 voicemail. All that in the same number, 424-532-0678. You can tweet at us at B1G Podcast. And if you have the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify, which David hates, you can leave us a 5-star rating. And on Apple, leave us a review. I'm going to pull up on what we got here on the Spotify. Well, if you want to talk for a second, David, I'm going to pull up on Spotify. We have more comments on our shows on Spotify, even though David doesn't like that.
I'm amazed. I'm delighted. I'm absolutely ecstatic about that. We do have a couple of new reviews on iTunes.
You want to do that? Okay.
Sure. This is from AP, not Associated Press. Thank you for your service. I can't think of a more mediocre way to spend my Friday night drive from Riverside to Ventura County than to listen to the Podcast of Champions. If you think that I am being facetious, one of Dave's top 3 words, think again. I appreciate the commentary regarding UCLA's strongest sport and the sport that drives USC's bankruptcy, as well as information regarding programs over 2,000 miles away and 3 time zones from the West Coast. Thank you, Ryan and David, for your service in helping me navigate my way across the 210, 134, and 101 with a, dare I say, cheerful attitude. Love it. That's very nice. We have one more. This is from DuckFan68. Back to mediocrity. Dear Jeff and NJ, I'm assuming that stands for not Jeff. Without the true sound effects for the mascots or schools, you sank below the mediocrity Mendoza line by trying to do it yourself. However, you made a valiant comeback up to the mediocrity level when you discussed Dante Moore's tutelage under UCLA's greatest coach in history 2 years ago, and that possibly that was all Drew Aller was missing in order to win the Heisman and take Penn State to the Natty. So please, no more ad-libbing the intros to the schools. Due to commitments to do absolutely nothing during the week, I decided to wait and listen to the Podcast of Champions after the Week 5 games were played. I would say this made the podcast more enjoyable, but the former lawyer in me would scream, facts not in evidence, that listening to the podcast was enjoyable in the first place. Be that as it may, it was fun to listen to your prognostications after the games were played and discover most of your insights have been eaten by a black hole. The good news is knowing the IQ points that you guys used to make your predictions, I was able to mortgage everything I had in betting against UCLA to cover. So now my dreams of a vacation condo on 3 Mile Island will have to wait for your next, quote, pick of the decade. Last week, I did enjoy you calling yourselves incompetent boobery, as I'm sure that's what you were doing when you mentioned that term, because I don't see how it could apply to anything else you were talking about. Anyway, congrats on getting back to mediocrity, and I look forward to listening to your Week 7 picks just prior to the Week 8 games. Thank you, DuckFan68. I really appreciate that.
Should we send DuckFan68 a Trader Joe's gift card?
Absolutely. DuckFan68, please email Big10Cast@gmail.com and send us your address information, and we will send you a Trader Joe's gift card.
And by we, David means me.
Hey, but I just gave the part that you usually say, so I've done my part.
You did, yes. Although I'd like to just email it to me because I'm the one that's going to do it.
Oh, anyway. Right. Email Ryan at
USCFootball.com.
Ryan at USCFootball.com. Do that
one. Yeah. If you listen to my picks for UCLA, I took all those points and didn't need them. So just so you know.
True. I was guzzling far too much of the, the just following too much UCLA for too long.
Spotify comments. Peyton says, will Lincoln Riley ever achieve as many top 10 wins as USC at USC as Tim Skipper did in his second game?
Great UCLA. Question. Ryan, what do you think? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, maybe not. And then Diego Duke, whatever, you never see my comments, blah, 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 fart. There you go. I got your comment.
Love it.
Yeah, so we got some comments. So that's good stuff there. Yeah, keep the comments coming in the chat. I will try to put them up on the screen. Also want to let you guys know about our friends over at MyBookie. This is weird, David. I mentioned this to Connor. The last 2 weeks, the two prior weeks to this past one, our picks were both pretty garbage. This week, picks good, mine better. The previous 2 weeks, my fantasy teams were great. And then this week, when I picked really well in the Big Ten, my fantasy team went to crap. So I'm not sure what's going on. I got to figure which one's going to work. But fantasy league, that's bragging rights.
You're not sure what's going on?
You're
pretty sure what's going on, right? We're feigning that you don't understand, but it's because it's pure luck and vagaries of fate, and that's what sports betting is for most people, right?
Yeah,
Okay, cool.
But some of us know stuff. We've been consistently beating the spread over the last 8 or 9 years when we were picking these.
This is my favorite part of this bit, when Ryan convinces people we're good at this.
We've done the research. You've done the research. You might have some gut picks. It's time to cash in on those. Saturday, it's college chaos. And of course, on Sunday, NFL insanity. With the MyBookie, you have every angle covered: spreads, player props, live bets, and the ones you only whisper about until they hit. The setup seamless, one account, one wallet. Bet your game. You can play a little blackjack, reload without ever leaving the app. And if you're new to MyBookie, use our promo code POC. Any bet you choose, up to 500 big ones, will be fully covered. You make your play, and if it doesn't hit, you're going to get it right back when you opt in using our bet back bonus token. And you get that by using the promo code POC. This isn't fantasy. This is a real season. Let's cash with my bookie.
That was a beautiful read.
Yes. Thanks. We appreciate it. Borbo. Wait, does Lincoln Riley not have a top 10 win at USC?
He does not.
I don't think so. No,
he has zero top 10 wins. Sadly. I just went through, just so everyone knows I'm fact-checking here. At the time of play, I want to say his best win is over number 15 Notre Dame in 2022, his first year. Okay. In 2023, he lost to every ranked team besides Louisville. That was number 15 Louisville in the bowl game. And then last year, what did I say the first one was? Number 14?
15, I think he said.
Okay, well, he beat number 13 LSU at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, then last year.
That is his best win. And now, if we're Tim Skipper, in his two games as the UCLA head coach, has one top 10 win. Did those balloons show up on the? Do you think they showed up on the actual thing? Let's see.
Did you put this up and you got
balloons? Yeah, 'cause I gave two fingers and it gave the happy birthday balloons.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Let's go, Apple. You gave the fight on. Yeah.
You should screen cap that one. So Tim Skipper, his rate of getting top 10 wins is 50% now as the UCLA head coach. I want to say, and I'm not a math guy, and I understand this is difficult, but in 45 games, I believe Lincoln Riley's rate of top 10 wins right now, I'm not a math guy, but I believe it's 0%.
It is zero.
Huh.
I think Tim Skipper would be like all time number one, 50% of the time beating top 10 teams.
I would have to imagine, right?
Yeah.
And Jerry Neuheisel has to have among the highest points per drive for an offensive coordinator in history.
Against top 10 teams, I would think so.
Yeah. Well, definitely against top 10 teams, but I think just like in general. I mean,
and some great lettuce.
Some great lettuce.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go. I want to thank Matthew, because we did, with the big upset, there were some casualties in the survivor pool. 252 started, 29 entered week six. There's only 23 of you left. All six losers, yes, they picked Penn State, thought it'd be safe. It was not. The winners, We had 9 Michigan picks, 7 picked Northwestern. That's a good time to pick them. Illinois, 5. 1 had Ohio State, and 1 had Nebraska. So we got 23 people left. First eliminated team, every surviving player has taken Purdue. Only 1 surviving player has not yet picked Maryland, and only 2 have not yet taken Rutgers. There's 3 teams still available to every player, Michigan, Penn State, and UCLA. This was the 1 week. No one picked UCLA. People picked UCLA like every week, and it didn't work. The 1 week they won, nobody picked them. Some good comments from this week. Going forward, a lot of picks are just whoever's playing Purdue or UCLA. Well, that's why 6 people got knocked out. Bruins march to 0-12 continues. FUCLA 0-12, and you're eliminated. UCLA winning this game would be hilarious. It was hilarious, and you're eliminated too. Thanks, Matthew, for doing all of that.
Beautiful.
Good stuff. So we've got a bunch of games to get to. Obviously, we mentioned the crazy one with UCLA. We did our power rankings. Now, I did these again. David, I think, glanced at them. There might be some controversy here, so you can get mad at me or whatever, but
no, yeah. I think you should get mad at me.
Why?
Just for fun.
Okay. I think I can defend this too. Number 18, we have
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. And they went on the road, Pasadena, the Rose Bowl, to take on
UCLA Bruins.
Rawr. All right, I'm going to start this with a little bit of a personal note, because I was gearing up for the most miserable slog of a season in history. Like, for UCLA people out there, there was a season like this in basketball very recently where UCLA had an interim head coach for 3 months, Murray Bartow, after Steve Alford was fired after losing to Liberty. And it was just like a nothing season where every game was like the equivalent of a bowl game where your team is just like not even showing up. Nobody cares. I'm going to get the laundry basket out of the back of my, because Ryan had the temerity to put me full screen. and I'll sit up straight. So I was getting ready for that. And so this game surprised me, like, in the most, I want to say joyful way, but that's such a weird way to describe it. But like, not even as like a fan of the team, even though, like, let's be real. Like, I know I hate them most of the time, but like, I do care. In like a professional capacity, like having something that's actually enjoyable to watch was amazing. Cause I was expecting this season to be nothing but dog shit the entire way through. Sorry, Griffin. And so, like, from the opening drive, where UCLA, with Jerry Neuheisel having taken over as the offensive coordinator on Tuesday, producing, like, by far the best drive of the season and maybe the best drive of the last 2 years, was wild. And so even from that moment, like, I was like, it really doesn't matter how this game goes. Like, Penn State could go on a 49-0 run now and it would be fine because, hey, that was kind of cool. Like, that was something to see. But then it just continued. And I'm going to get to Penn State's contribution there, because I think that's the thing that gives me pause about thinking this is going to be something that lasts. But Jerry Neuheisel's offensive game plan, Nico Iamaliava being kind of, I think, what everyone expected him to be coming in, or every UCLA fan. I know Tennessee fans expected him to be dog shit or whatever, but rational people thought he was going to be pretty good. And then Tim Skipper, I think, completely changing the attitude of this team, where they're playing with energy and they seem to care. Like, when you're watching a team that's going through the motions and you've got to stare at 8 more potential games for that team and you're covering them for a living, it's just like, what interesting thing is there to write about? Like, I was writing my preview last week and I'm like, this is hell. I don't want to write about this team because they don't seem to care. Makes me not care, but I have to care because it's my job. And so, like, from 2 angles, I think for fans, obviously, it's just, this is, now it's fun. Now it's back to being like, hey, are they going to win another game? Who cares? Pressure's off. Let's see. It's going to be fun. But also, like, professionally, like, they got the players to, like, really go out there and give a shit. And it makes everything, like, okay, They've got a pulse now. Maybe they won't win another game. Maybe they will win a couple. Doesn't really matter. The game itself, my main takeaway is this. UCLA played pretty much its A-plus game, and it did require Penn State probably playing its D to D-minus game to win by five. There was some weird stuff that happened. I say A-plus game. It was probably an A game for UCLA because there were a couple things that happened. They gave up a blocked punt TD. They allowed their own safety at the end, which made the score probably a little bit closer. But they had to do pretty much everything right offensively, because defensively, they were still allowing Drew Aller, of all people, to run for big first down gains constantly. And the thing was, if you watch the game over again, like I had to, and there's a bunch of film breakdowns that are really good on YouTube about this game because a lot of Penn State fans are incensed. Penn State didn't come in with a game plan to win this game. They thought this was going to be a walkover. And they didn't account for Nico Iamaliava's legs, which is insane, because that was the only part of this offense that functioned before this game. It wasn't it wasn't on film. It was the only part that was any good before this game. And they didn't have spies for him until very late. And then it was denied Dennis Sutton, who, of all of his many fantastic qualities as a player, he is not super agile laterally. So how do you have him spying one of the better athletes I've seen at quarterback at UCLA ever? How do you do that? And they had him spying him on, it turned out to be a quarterback scramble to score a touchdown. That was crazy. But before that, I guess some of it was Tony Rojas being out for the season, but they don't have another athletic-ish linebacker or a safety that they might want to spy. It's not like UCLA was challenging them deep. There was one deep pass in this game, and it was, again, maybe the most perfectly thrown ball from Nico's time as a quarterback. Again, he played by far his best game as a Bruin. But I thought Penn State's game plan just looked like they didn't install anything for this game, and they thought they could just beat UCLA. I think they, as many of us did, because when a team's playing bad, it's hard not to point at everything. They looked at the talent and said, they're not talented and we can just beat them. And so there were a lot of plays where the receivers were running bad routes and just not really cutting on these DBs. I can just run past them. And they couldn't, because they're still FBS level players. A bunch of these guys were highly rated prospects at one point. Long story short, I thought UCLA played extremely well. I thought they played extremely, with extremely great energy. And I think football, more than almost any other sport, is a vibes game. If you're coming in with good energy and a really good attitude, that does go a long way. Because you got to have commitment to play a sport that physical, and you've got to be mindset's got to be right. And I think UCLA's was, and I think Penn State's was dog shit. I think their coaches did a horrible job preparing them. And I thought, frankly, I came away much more impressed with Drew Aller than I thought I would be going into that game. He did everything for that offense, and it wasn't quite enough. But he played lights out. I don't know why they're giving Nick Singleton the ball so much when Katron Allen was getting 10 yards a clip. It was insane.
Yeah. Hold on. We got a super chat. It's me 209. Fight on, David Woods. That was from way back when you did your fight on. Thank you for the super chat. $4.99.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
That's really cool. Yeah, I was out in Temecula. My uncle's birthday was out there. My parents flew in. We were going out. We were watching this in the car. And to see that opening drive for UCLA was wow. They moved the ball. Jerry Neuheisel, look what he's doing. And then the onside kick was freaking amazing. Unreal. And then at that point, you're just Oregon wouldn't play that way. Oregon's going to play to win the game. You felt like Penn State was we're going to just try not to lose, and we'll be better at some point. And then they weren't better, and you're like, well, now what do we do? Shit.
Well, it was an insane coaching mismatch, just on the head coaching level too. What the hell was James Franklin thinking at the end of the first half? The clock management was insane.
Yeah, that was wild.
Every single time UCLA had a situation, they were making the right choice. Like, it was, we're going to take the safety at the end and bleed 8 more seconds.
Yeah.
Perfectly right decision, because first, you've already had a punt blocked. Second, on the safety kickoff, you're going to get it a lot deeper than you would on a punt out of your own end zone. Yeah. Absolutely flawless decision that Deshaun Foster literally in his life never would have made. The onside kick, perfectly timed. You have nothing to lose, everything to gain. Absolutely 100% the right decision. And then after James Franklin dramatically messes up the clock at the end of the first half, Tim Skipper with 22 seconds gets him perfectly in position for a field goal and gets another 3 points.
There was just really good coaching decisions there. And the fact that once the storm was weathered and then it looked like, uh-oh, it's a 21-point game and then it was a 7-point game, then you're like, okay, UCLA is going to lose this one and fought back. And that's the thing. It's like, hey, that's that was really impressive. So I'm going to star some. Oh, we got.
Yeah, that question's important.
I can star some questions and stuff. Sorry, too. Okay, cool. People were asking. So if you missed the beginning of the rant, I moved Penn State to number 18. They're 0-2 in conference and weren't impressive in their crappy out-of-conference wins. And UCLA have 16 because they still lost to Northwestern and they've only won one game. But that's where I had them. I don't know if you think that's okay, David.
I think that's totally fine.
Okay. Let's go to our next game. We have number 17.
Wisconsin Badgers.
At number 5.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch. On the list of things I hate, Ryan, why Luke Fickell surrendered at the end of this game. Like, first they had, like,
insane.
Like, they had a...
By the way, the UCLA game, I got that right. You got it wrong. I took UCLA plus the 25.5, and UCLA won. So that was, like, a just horrible, horrible, horrible pick for you.
Yeah.
One, same thing. Not same thing, but Michigan was favored by 17.5. I took Wisconsin in the points and got it right. But Fickell almost screwed it up at the end.
Well, yeah. I mean, this was so they
no
kicked a field
cover, but then more importantly, he could have tried to get a win somehow, and he didn't.
Yeah, this is the thing that I just hate is like, look, are your odds of getting a win down 2 touchdowns with whatever it was? What was it? 2, like a hair over. You had the 2-minute timeouts
left, and you had 3 timeouts.
Yeah, and you've got the 2-minute warning still coming. And you're not even trying. And it's just like, I know your offense has been a struggle bus all game, and I know it's probably not going to happen, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And all you're trying to do at this point is put lipstick on a pig. I hated this when Deshaun Foster was constantly doing it last season, and then he started this year doing it. I hate it from Luke Fickell, too. Part of the reason I hate it is because if they'd been still trying at that point in the game, Michigan might have tried to score again, and then they would have covered.
They still tried to score. That was the problem. Yeah. So it's like... So Fickell's doing surrender cobra. Like, I'm not going to call my timeouts, even though I could stop the clock 4 times. Like, there's plenty of time to get the ball back and score. Like, then it would just be onside kick at score. So Fickell surrender cobras, doesn't call the timeouts, which is like, all right. But Michigan doesn't take a knee or anything. They run plays, and they're like, they get down. What they got down? It's like a 10 or something. I'm like, oh my god, if Jerome Moore covers this because Fickell surrendered.
I think they were just going. I think they were just running their offense. I don't think they would have like really tried to score, but maybe. I don't know. I'm just like, well, and honestly, it's an uncomfortable position for him to be in because this guy still has his timeouts and he's not using them. But like, I can't just sit here and take a knee because he still has 3 timeouts. So what are we doing here?
I guess, yeah. Like if you take a knee and then it called timeout, they're like, okay.
Well, then suddenly you've wasted a play. So you're kind of in this constant position of what the hell. And that's where you don't want to be. Like as a fan, we got Matthew in the chat, but like you want to watch your team play. Unless it's like a murderous ass kicking. Like you're down 59-0. And it's, you're down 59-0. You want the game to end as soon as humanly possible. This one, it's like, you've seen games where a team is down by 14 points with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left, and they come back to win. Like, you've seen those games before. They happen. They're not like yes, they're like in the 2% or below chance or whatever, but they're not out of the realm of possibility. Just quitting like a dog. It's like, what are we doing here? It's just, I don't know. I mean, I think Luke Fickell is trying to save his job in like the most boring and awful way possible.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, not to talk just about Wisconsin. It's just that stuff annoys me so much. Michigan was good. I think they're a really solid team, and I think they're going to give USC a lot of trouble this weekend. Bryce Underwood, watching him week after week, I think he's getting better every week. You know, they ran the ball really well. I like Michigan. I think they're improved offensively from where they were a year ago. I know it's not saying a whole lot, but I think they're improved.
Yeah. The Daily Grind is saying, did you see the end? Yeah, we were just talking about that. I don't know if the first two games, if you know there's something in common, David.
You got them both right and I got them wrong.
Well, that's one thing in common. But the other thing is, and I went with a lot of underdogs this past week, the underdog scored a touchdown first. And UCLA, they end up winning. Wisconsin scores first, and then they just went to crap. Our next team coming in, what do we have them at? Number 15 is
Northwestern Wildcats.
And the same thing happened in this game.
It turned a little bit the other way.
Yes.
Riding the high off of beating, obviously, a surging UCLA team, Northwestern, they had a little bit of that victory hangover, you know, such a big win that they were just like, you know, we're not quite ready for this game. And so they allowed a quick score. But then 42 unanswered on the mighty Louisiana Monroe Warhawks. Preston Stone was good. They ran the ball really well. I don't want to talk about this game anymore.
And you got this one right. Like I took this was.
Yeah,
like,
you took ULM. What an idiot. So what a moron.
I take ULM getting what was like double digits, right? It was where was it? Where we got 11.5 points. And they score a touchdown first, and I'm like, all right, this is cool. But then it wasn't after that. But yeah, congrats to Northwestern and everyone that picked him in the survivor pool. That worked out pretty well. All right, number 14, we've got
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
They were on a bye.
They were on a bye. And then next up, we got number 13,
Purdue Boilermakers.
And they were taking on number 4,
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
It was another underdog that scored first.
Purdue scored first in this one too.
It actually took Illinois a while to get it rolling.
We both had Purdue and then 9.5 points, and Illinois ended up covering. So we both got this wrong. Just real quick, by the way, I was 5-2 for the week. David was 4-3, so we were both above 500, which was good after the previous week. I'm just one game ahead of David in the overall standings.
Purdue had a lot of opportunities late to actually cover this one. And by a lot of opportunities, I mean, they had a lot of drives late. They just didn't do anything for basically, you know, I think they had 3 drives at the end of the game and just weren't able to move the ball really. Illinois just took control. I mean, they're a much better team than Purdue is right now. What I'll say is Purdue remains, and I know people don't like this word used in relation to Purdue, but Purdue remains frisky. Like they look much more competent than they did last year. I don't know how many more wins it's going to translate to, but even in this one, I mean, what was it? Almost a 1-score game in the fourth quarter. Like it's, you know, it was 40-27 after they scored and then they forced a punt. Like, you know, I mean, things break a little bit differently in Purdue's in a competitive game in the fourth quarter. So anyway, Illinois ended up winning by 16. Purdue just needed to score one more time, and we would.
So Purdue scores the opening drive. Illinois scores, and then Purdue's moving again, and then fumbles, and Illinois scored. It started a 27-0 run for Illinois. That it looked like you were going to be trading scores. I feel like that second possession, I believe it was a fumble, not an interception. I forget, but the turnover that Purdue had that second drive kind of screwed them, and then it, you know, 20 more points were scored after that in a row by Illinois, and that's that's what kind of sunk them. Like, you don't turn the ball over then. I feel like it's kind of more of a back and forth thing, and it's probably closer. And, you know, Illinois probably wins by like seven or something. But I think that turnover just sort of set them back a lot. If you're watching.
And like the thing I'd say is, like, every time Purdue had the ball, pretty much they moved it a little bit. Like, they had a couple of three and outs, but for the most part, it was, you know, they were getting it 37. They got it 37 yards downfield on the fumble. They got it 28 yards on one of their punts. Like, they were, there's just putting it together for like the length of an entire drive has been a little bit more of a challenge, but they're not like completely inept. And, you know, I think there's signs of life here.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to number 12.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Taking on number 9.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
All right, Aiden Childs had his first Aiden Childs game of the year, but I'm going to put a big caveat on this one.
Do you want to say like what we picked? Remember?
Oh, you do that. You can look at it right now.
Nebraska was favored by 11.5. We both took Michigan State and both got it right by a half a point.
Yeah. Aiden Childs he wasn't good, but the big caveat here is his offensive line was booty. They had Stanton Ramil, who's their typical starting left tackle. He's out for a month. So they shifted their right tackle, Connor Moore, over to the left tackle. And then I'm blanking on the guy's name, Lepo, I think, in at right tackle. And boy, was that not a good combination. Nebraska, I think, had 4 sacks, but they were pressuring him constantly. He went down with an injury at one point in the second quarter, and then he was pulled for the final drive because he looked really banged up. His backup actually didn't look too bad. Alessio, I'm going to butcher his last name. It's Eastern European Milivojevic. But Aiden Childs was, I mean, his stats are awful. He threw for 85 yards and 2 picks, no interceptions or no touchdowns. And like running the ball, they weren't very effective. It was actually kind of impressive they were even in this game. Their defense played pretty well. Dylan Raiola was not super sharp, and no. Nebraska didn't run the ball very well. They also got a decent amount of pressure on Dylan Raiola. So it was kind of a defensive slugfest, which is a weird way to describe a 38-27 game. There was also some special teams.
Yeah.
Special stuff.
I think Nebraska had like 2 straight quarters of just like yuck. Like they just sort of disappeared in the middle of the game for a while. And I don't think Nebraska fans feel great about this. Michigan State doesn't like Aiden Childs looking like last year's Aiden Childs.
It was the offensive line, man. I mean, I don't think he was great, but they were in trouble. And then there was like a weird fight on the sideline between Aiden Childs and his top receiver, Nick Marsh.
Yeah.
They talked about it afterwards, and apparently it was just kind of the frustration of that game. I understood. I was frustrated watching it. you can't have that, so... Hopefully that gets cleared up, but like a lot of just weird stuff coming out of this one. And Michigan State, they got to figure out their offensive line super quick. Maybe not for UCLA because UCLA doesn't really have a pass rush, but they got to figure it out really quick if Ramil is going to be out for a whole month.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird one, Michigan State was like seemed like they were close, and then this seems like you weren't as close. That's a problem. Nebraska's got a good chance to just keep winning games. Like they got some winnable games on the schedule. So we'll see if they can keep it rolling. But yeah, there were some ugly parts from both sides on this one.
Yep.
Let's go to number 11.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
And then number 1.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
I think we more or less... picked this one correct. Did you pick it correctly? I don't know.
We both did. We took Ohio State -23.
Yeah, because I remember saying in our show I thought they were going to murder them, and they did. 42-3 Ohio State. Not a whole lot to say here. Minnesota's definitely taken a step back from last year. Like they do not look anywhere near as good. And they were very bad in this one. Defensively, I mean, Julian Sain was doing whatever he wanted in the passing game. Minnesota had no answers. I guess they stopped the run okay. I wouldn't say it was awesome, but it was okay. but they allowed whatever they wanted in the passing game. And Ohio State had this in full blowout mode. I don't know, midway through the third quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was sort of hanging around early, but
Minnesota couldn't score. They couldn't move the ball at all.
Minnesota scored first, right? Or did, yeah, they were, it was like, was it 3-0 or so? I forget what it was.
Yeah, but it was 3-0.
And again, the underdog getting the first bite at the apple, and then that was the only bite.
they didn't get – all right, so after the first drive where they went 66 yards, they didn't get more than 20 yards on a drive until the fourth quarter when they went 52 yards for a missed field goal. Every other drive was fewer than 19 yards. They went three and out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times before they went more than 20 yards again. Like Ohio State's got a good defense. No questions about it, but you can't be that incompetent offensively. And their quarterback play is not good.
I think coming into the game, Ohio State led the nation in scoring defense at like 5.5 points. And then they give up 3. Like then they made it better. Like, which is insane. We'll see once there's some better offenses start coming up. Texas doesn't look as good as we thought it was, but
I'm interested to see Minnesota Purdue this weekend. I think it's going to be very interesting.
Interesting.
Like as a hierarchy thing.
Yes.
Because I'm concerned Minnesota is booty ass. And
we have them at 11. Like they would drop a ton.
I'm concerned. Well, they beat Rutgers, so we can't like drop them too low. It's just, I don't know. I don't know. Purdue, I think, can score, and I'm not sure Minnesota can.
All right, let's move on. We had the previously undefeated number 10,
Maryland Terrapins.
And they were hosting now number 6,
Washington Huskies.
Woof. Well, we both got this correct, right?
Yeah, we both
took Maryland plus 5.
Maryland plus 6.5.
Yeah,
Maryland was up 20-0, so that we were looking pretty good.
We were in pretty good shape, but good God,
again, the underdogs like going.
If
crazy.
I was a Maryland fan right now, I'd be like looking like longingly at the bleach, sitting above the laundry. You know,
take a nice long pull off of it.
What a collapse! They were up 20-0 in the third quarter. Washington looked dead on arrival. Like they did not.
They were still getting off the plane.
Oh my God, they looked awful. Just absolutely awful. Turned it over on downs twice in the first half, threw a pick on the first drive. Awful. Just awful. And Maryland was fine. Like they were moving the ball fine. They were okay. They weren't great, but they were fine. And then it was like they just switched positions. It was like, oh, okay. You looked off on the first half. Now it's our turn. We're just going to be bad. We're going to be horrible. And let's see if you guys can score now. Because Washington was suddenly super efficient. They had 4 drives, or 4 real drives. They also had the ball at the end of the game. But they had 4 real drives in the second half. It was 16 plays, 55 yards for a field goal. 9 plays, 74 yards for a touchdown. 4 plays, 75 yards for a touchdown. And 11 plays, 80 yards for a touchdown. Like, could not have been more different than that first half. Like the drives in the first half were 5 plays, 12 yards pick, 5 plays, 13 yards punt, 9 plays, 31 yards turnover on downs, 5 plays, 14 yards punt, 5 plays, 11 yards turnover on downs, end of half, 4 plays, 10 yards. Like could not be more different. I mean, obviously adjustments and whatnot, but I think a big part of it was somebody lit a fire under the Washington players' asses at halftime and maybe jump-started Jed Fish's brain because he, I don't know, traveled the piano and had it crush his skull Friday night before the game. But Washington was a different team in the second half, and that's the story of this game. Yeah. That's it.
Crazy. Yeah, that was to go 20 straight from Maryland and 24 straight from Washington. You're like, okay. Someone makes a play on either side of that and you can win the game. But I, you know, just to get the win, I mean, it showed, I think the travel does impact things. But Washington looked like a better, you know, a much better team in the second half. So kudos to Jed Fish. Like it looked like they're playing pretty well. Like that Ohio State's really good. You know, you lost that game, but Outside of that, they look like they're a pretty darn good team. So that's why we have them up at number six.
Nice.
Okay. We already talked about number nine, Nebraska. Number eight. Where the heck is?
USC Trojans.
On a bye?
The Trojans were on a bye. However, do you think the Big Ten is going to retroactively grant them a win against Illinois because of, I mean, Lincoln Riley's latest, very important thing? Not a complaint, not a whine. Certainly we wouldn't call it that. But his reconsideration of a play from Illinois, you want to shed some light on this?
What are we talking about? Oh, there's, I don't know. I don't pay attention to stuff. Which player are you talking about?
Lincoln Riley. Let me get the names right. I was just
throwing something at me that you don't know. Like,
well, no, he was talking about the play against Illinois, where let me pull it up.
Oh, I think it was a touchdown. There should have been a hold on. Yeah. Or something. Yeah. Look,
I'm just wondering because obviously this is a significant issue. Is the Big Ten going to retroactively grant them a win?
Obviously should. But you know, there's. It was pretty bad. Like, shotgun.
This guy would never whine. Like, I would never call Lincoln Riley a whiner who brings up petty shit all the time. Like, certainly not, right?
No, yeah.
Certainly doesn't bring to light all these things that happen every single week in every single game of college football, but bring them up as if they are specially targeting his teams and him personally. Like, we wouldn't say that about him, that he does that selectively.
Right.
In a whiny fashion.
I think we agree, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously this is a matter of great import, and they will clearly be granted the win.
Right? Yeah, I don't think that works that way, but, you know, let's see. Like,
huh.
I'll write the Big Ten office and see what I can find out.
Okay.
But they're on a bye.
Great. I mean, obviously they're on a bye, so it'd be great to get a win on the bye week.
Right, yes, you want to do that. Because UCLA apparently lost the bye week.
Is everyone ready for 7-5 USC?
You said their floor was 9-3.
Is everyone ready for 7-5
USC? Do I have to clip that for you?
Maybe.
Number seven.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Blessedly on a bye. I can't watch any more Iowa football.
That was on a bye. We talked about number six, Washington. Number five, Michigan. Number four, Illinois. We got number three.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
On a bye.
They're on a bye because they got a good one coming up against number two.
Oregon Ducks.
On a bye.
Also on a bye. And number one, Ohio State, we already talked about.
Beautiful.
So now we get to talk about the games.
The games of the upcoming week.
Yeah. So this team flew east. Now their opponent's flying west. We have
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
Heading to Seattle to take on
Washington Huskies.
6 p.m. on FS1 on Friday night. Rutgers traveling to Washington. Washington's 10.5-point favorite. Ryan, what do we remember from the days of the Pac-12 about road teams on Friday night games?
It doesn't go well.
They suck shit.
Yeah.
They're awful. And what do we know about Rutgers already this year?
They're kind of awful.
They suck shit. They're awful. Give me Washington. This is obvious. Easy. Easy.
Yeah, Rutgers. I'm going to take Washington too. I thought about Rutgers just because it's a lot of points. And we just saw Washington play with its food against Maryland. But I think they're going to keep that going. Rutgers, this is a long way to go, and it is a Friday night, which is blowy, blow, blow. We know that. So this has Pac-12 after dark Friday night bullshit. Sorry, Griffin, written all over it. So I wouldn't have been taking points lately, but I'm going to lay them with Washington and hope no pianos fall on Jed Fish's head.
Fair enough.
So I'll agree with you. Next up.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
And they're on the road taking on
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network, UCLA. Mighty UCLA. The Mighty Bruins traveling to Michigan State to take on the Wounded Spartans. Michigan State is an 8.5-point favorite in East Lansing. The way I'm looking at this is a few things. One, Michigan State, their offensive line issues are a concern, and they haven't really been able to run the ball that well this year. They also now have an issue with protecting the passer. Is UCLA able to take advantage? I don't know. I don't think so. And Aiden Chiles is a run threat. Is UCLA equipped to handle a running quarterback? I don't know. Probably not. They didn't really handle Drew Aller that well running the ball, and Chiles is a superior athlete. On the flip side, is UCLA for real offensively at some capacity? Like, did they figure some stuff out against Penn State that is applicable beyond that game? I also kind of don't know. In the absence of all of that, you know what I'm going to do here, Ryan?
What?
I'm going to take them points. Give me UCLA plus 8.5.
All right, now that's giving me pause, because the previous 2 weeks, I've taken your UCLA Bruins, and they've covered both weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
You've taken UCLA's opponents, and it's hurt you.
Correct.
So now that you're switching teams, like, do I need to switch teams? No, I'm gonna stick with UCLA. I've been riding this winning streak, covering more than a touchdown on the road. Like, you know, could there be like a hangover and they just get blown out by Michigan State and they don't give a shit because?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
That could happen.
I followed UCLA a long time. I know the way these things work.
Yeah, but you know, 8.5 points. Michigan State's not that good. Like, if they were playing at Maryland, maybe, like, I'd take Maryland. Nebraska, maybe not, but like Michigan State, like, they played their worst game this last week. So yeah, give me the Bruins. There's a chance that UCLA keeps going, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a chance that they look like absolutely.
There's a chance that they face plant so hard and we're all sitting here like, wow, that was a weird fever dream of a week. But like, honestly, from like a storyline standpoint, like, for UCLA to somehow steal a positive narrative from this season to the point where they're like on national TV with like Skip and Jerry giving interviews and it's like a buddy comedy. What's going on? Like, that's crazy. How did that happen? And it's because, it's because of the Neuheisel family. It's because of
to see like Rick Neuheisel like cheering in the studio. That was pretty awesome.
Even like USC fans were like hitting me up and being like, this is really heartwarming. Like, this is because I think
it's his kid. Like,
one, I think for a lot of us, like, LA folks, like, if USC was ever down for like a really long time and looked like depressingly bad, like, I'm not saying I wouldn't like enjoy it at some level, but I'd also be like, this kind of sucks. Like, this isn't as fun as when, you know, both teams are competitive and good. So yeah. I think for like USC fans, like, I think some of them are like, yeah, this is great. You know, screw UCLA. But I think for some of them, it's like, okay, they can be bad. They can be like 6-6, but don't be like 0-12. That's embarrassing. Don't embarrass us. We're not like, you're supposed to be our rival. Don't be a weirdo. And it's just like, you know, it's nice when they, you know, show a pulse and look like a real team again.
I think 0-12, everybody could have rooted for.
True. Nobody can root for 1-11.
1-11, now you don't care. But because that one wasn't Northwestern, it was Penn State. Like, that's
funny.
Now 1-11 is way, like, now 1-11 is almost funnier than 0-12 when it's the one win was Penn State. Like, I think it was my sophomore year or junior year or something. USC, I forget who they played the first game. Like, they won. And it was Memphis State at the time. Now it's Memphis. Came into the Coliseum and beat USC. And the very next week, top five Penn State came in. I think it was top five. And USC beat them, which was so weird. So it's just like, it just makes it worse when you're like, how can you beat this top five team, but you lost to like Memphis State the week before?
Yeah, they lost. I mean, this same team lost to New Mexico at home by 25 points. They beat Penn State. No, I mean, the funniest result for this season now, obviously, revising things, is 2-10, and the two wins are over Penn State
and
then USC. That would be the funniest result, because they're not beating Indiana or Ohio State on the road. It's just not happening. But that's the funniest realistic result.
But this one's a winnable road game, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Speaking of, we got number one.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
On the road, taking on
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
9 a.m. on Big Fox, number one, Ohio State. I guess this is the big noon game. Ohio State playing at 9 a.m. traveling to number 17, Illinois.
We've got the body clock for UCLA.
Oh, yeah. Body clock's going to be an issue. 9 a.m. games for Pacific Coast teams are not good.
Yeah.
Number 17, Illinois. Ohio State's a 14.5 point favorite. I don't know what to make of Illinois at this point. I think they're solid, but I think they might be in the same kind of boat as Indiana was in last year, where they'll beat teams that are pretty like even or bad, and they'll beat them handily, like more or less handle business. But I'm wondering if the challenge for them is facing off against teams with greater talent, where they kind of just get smoked off the field. Because that kind of happened against Indiana. I think Indiana's a more talented team this year than Illinois is. And I kind of think that might happen in this game too. I think Ohio State's defensive talent is going to be really tough for Luke Altmaier to deal with. I still have visions of him getting sacked, I think 75 times against Indiana.
It was 9, but yes.
And I'm having a hard time shaking that. And I think Ohio State will do enough offensively to score. So I'm going to take Ohio State in the 14.5. I think they cover. I don't love it, but I think they're a lot more talented than Illinois, and I think that's going to play a big role here.
I don't love this either. I think I'm going to take the points just because I could see it being sort of like closer than you think it is. And Ohio State looks better, but it's a 7-point game a lot of the time. And then, maybe they win by like 10 or 13 or even 14 or something. Just with 14.5, I'm like, I think there's enough chance that this is somewhat competitive for a little bit. Fully knowing that Ohio State could flex its muscles. And I think they really throttled Washington. That was a little depleted when they played, but I mean, Washington didn't let them score like 100 points or anything. I feel like Illinois can sort of do that a little bit and make some things happen on offense. So it's just a lot of points. So I'll take them, fully understanding that Ohio State might just say, we are in a different class than you, Illini. It doesn't matter that we're in Champaign, but that's a lot of points. I'm just going to take the points right now.
Fair enough.
Here's a big one. Big. Number 7 in the polls.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Good folks. I'm from Indiana.
On the road, take it on number 3.
Oregon Ducks.
Game of the season, 12:30 p.m. on CBS. Number 7, Indiana, traveling to number 3, Oregon. Oregon's a 7.5 point favorite at home. Boy, I don't know which way to go on this one.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't. So two of my favorite coaches by far.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Yeah, I got to take Indiana in the points. But I'm sitting here and I'm like, Oregon could, like at home in front of that environment. I mean, and again, using the same theory as last year that maybe Indiana, when they're matched up against better talent, they don't look as freaky. But I don't know. This Indiana team looks better than it did last year, which is kind of surprising. We were not expecting that. I'll just take the points. Just give me the points.
Okay. I'm going to take
Oregon.
I'm going to take Oregon. And I feel like, yeah. These are the kind of games that Dan Lanning just shows out for. And, I think Indiana can sort of keep it close. But you had mentioned it's one of those situations where Indiana is going to boat race you if you're equal or lesser talent. This is not the case, you know. And some of the stuff that works for Indiana in those other games isn't going to work in this one against Oregon. It's on the road, hostile environment. I'm going to take the Ducks in this one.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Oregon is what you're faced with Oregon all the time is they combine elite talent with really good coaching. And that's just Indiana's got good talent and really good coaching, you know, and if things break right, you know, you can see a game, but also like Oregon could at any moment wipe the floor with anybody who isn't Alabama, Ohio State, you know, the other like four teams that have elite talent. And Indiana doesn't have elite talent. They've just got very good talent.
Yeah. They don't have elite talent, but they're an excellent, excellent team. I just think it's going to be a tall task too. I think Oregon made their big statement at Penn State. Penn State loses to UCLA. I don't know. It doesn't take shine off of, you know, winning in the whiteout, but I feel like they're going to try to make a statement here and say, look, we won the Big Ten last year. We didn't lose a game. We're not going to lose another one. We're going to take care of business here. All right. We got
Northwestern Wildcats.
On the road, take it on
Penn State Nittany Lions.
12:30 p.m. on FS1, a pair of unranked teams, probably similarly situated in the college football world. Something called Northwestern taking on, I believe this is Pennsylvania State. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
A pair of unranked teams. I mean, I don't know how much analysis we can have here. This Pennsylvania State is PSU. Wow. 21.5 points they're favored by. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think Northwestern is good. I'm not sure if Penn State is not a broken team right now. They were worse than they appeared against Oregon in a lot of ways. I mean, we talked about that game, and Oregon blew some opportunities to blow that game open. And then they were ass against UCLA. Northwestern beat UCLA the previous week, and now they're riding off of a win.
That's tough.
It's really tough because I don't think Northwestern's any good at all. God, I don't want to take Penn State minus 21.5. I really don't. But it's Northwestern. give me Penn State.
All right. You know what? I think I'm going to switch it too. I was going to do Northwestern, but I think I'm going to do Penn State.
They're just not good. Yeah. Northwestern's so not good. And Penn State, like, even when they're playing bad, you can still see that Deni Dennis Sutton is really good.
Yeah.
And he can make havoc on his own. And Preston Stone against him, Preston Stone's not making plays with his legs the way Nico Iamaliava was.
I mean, according to our power rankings, Northwestern should win. We have them at 15 and Penn State at 18.
That's a great point.
And we're saying Penn State's going to win by 21.5.
It's a good, good point.
This has to be a get right game. So much pressure, but I feel like Penn State can just play sort of. So like in the poker world, if you're like, you're a good player and you're playing against a bunch of like rookies, they say you just play ABC poker. Just do like bet your good hands, fold your bad ones. If you try some exotic bluff against somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, it doesn't work because they have no idea that you're bluffing anyway.
Correct.
Just play ABC. I feel like Penn State can play ABC football and win by like 24. So yeah, I just don't think Northwestern on the road is going to be able to push them around. If this was at Northwestern 21.5, I would take Northwestern, but I'm going to take Penn State here.
Yep.
Next up we got
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
On the road at
Maryland Terrapins.
12:30 p.m. on Big Ten Network, Nebraska traveling to Maryland, and it seems like it's a repeat of the exact same insane situation we were in last week. Maryland's a 6.5-point home dog. Why? Like, what have they done to deserve being a 6.5-point home dog to Nebraska? These are the same team. Like, the same way that Maryland and Washington were the same team.
Yeah.
Nobody should be getting more than 3 points in this game. Give me Maryland.
I'm going to go agree with you on this one. It was the exact same situation. Last week, we both took Maryland plus 6.5. It worked. This week, we're going to both take Maryland plus 6.5. And I think they can win this one outright, you know? So, yeah, I like this line. for just taking Maryland. Like this seems very coin flippy to me. And if you're going to get 6.5, almost a touchdown, yeah, just take the points. I don't see why you wouldn't do that.
Yep.
All right. Next up,
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Such a good one. On the road, take it on
Wisconsin Badgers.
4 p.m. on FS1, Iowa traveling to Wisconsin. Iowa's a 3.5-point road favorite. I think this is the game that starts the true fire Luke Fickell engines in the like Wisconsin alumni base, where they start trying to drum up buyout funds. I think Iowa wins this, and I think they hold Wisconsin to like 10 points, maybe less. Yeah. And I think they cover.
I agree with you here. Like 3.5 points, like Wisconsin should be the number 18 team.
Wisconsin's really bad, and I think it's kind of sneaking up on people, but they're not good at all.
No. And they kept it somewhat close, like 14 points against.
They haven't scored more than 14 points in a game against an FBS opponent, or a game against a Power 5 opponent so far this year.
And, you know, Iowa, like, you don't literally like having the lay more than a field goal if you're picking Iowa, but I just think Wisconsin's kind of butt. So, sorry,
Matthew.
Yeah, even Matthew says Iowa covers, shake my head. So this is going to be a rough watch going with Iowa. Yeah, so that's good. Hold on. So there were some comments that I missed because we were doing all the picks. Matthew says Franklin will get booed pregame. That's probably true, right?
He should.
And then says, isn't it homecoming in Happy Valley?
Don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care about stuff like that. Do you think it matters?
If the fan base isn't excited, then it's just like, blah, whatever. But I'll take Iowa also. All right. Now we got
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
On the road. Take it on
USC Trojans.
4:30 p.m. on NBC, number 15, Michigan traveling to USC. USC's a 2.5-point favorite. Ryan, what do you think? I know this can't be a scientific assessment, but what is USC's record after Lincoln Riley finds something new to whine about? It can't be good, right?
Probably not good.
Like, he whined about travel, and what did they go and do?
They lost. Yeah.
They lost Illinois. He whines about the Illinois game again this week. It's game week, buddy. You're whining about Illinois still. Mine's not right. This team's probably hungover still. Michigan looked sneaky good, I thought, last week. They should have won that game by more. I think they've got a rhythm offensively. They've got a guy who can run at quarterback, which I don't know, man. I'm not confident this USC defense can handle a whole lot right now, but I'm certainly not sure they can handle a running quarterback. Give me Michigan outright, baby.
Yeah, the fact that USC's favored is a little bit weird, just considering how poorly the defense has played. Bryce Underwood looked like almost like a real quarterback the last game, right? Like, okay, seems like
he's rounding into form. I think he's been pretty good all year, but I think he's getting better.
Yeah. USC's offense is really, really good, but their defense has been bad. If you can't force any kind of punts or anything, USC needs this one. Like, this is a desperate must win sort of game. And, you know, it's going to take the coaching staff, everyone, to just come together. But until they do it, I'm not going to pick them to do it. Like, they need this one badly. So,
because if they lose this one, guys out there in the world, they then go at Notre Dame, at Nebraska, back to back, and at Notre Dame, that's not going to be pretty. But then at Nebraska, that comes after a bye week, I think.
Yeah,
right?
It's a bye week. Yeah.
Nebraska is, like, I would say, in a similar tier as USC, so that's not a gimme. There's a situation developing here where if they lose this one, they're suddenly 4-4 entering November, and then it's nightmare fuel for every USC fan again.
Yeah, that would be That would be very, very bad. But Nebraska was my barometer game from the very beginning. Because Cornhuskers could be like 7-1 by the time that game comes around. So you got to get this win. Illinois had a bad loss on the road, bounced back, got a win at home. Pretty, not pretty. USC needs to win this one, but I'm not going to pick them to cover 2.5 points. All right, last game up. And I don't, there's no bye weeks this week, right? Everybody's playing, I think.
Yeah, I think that's everybody.
Purdue Boilermakers.
Taking on
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
4:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Purdue 2-3, traveling to Minnesota 3-2. Minnesota's a 7.5 point home favorite. Per my analysis earlier, give me Purdue, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won.
Yeah. Now give me all those points. Like, Minnesota's not good enough to be covering more than a touchdown.
Yeah, so. I need to see some signs of life from Minnesota against an actual team. And Rutgers barely counts. But I need to see them win by a lot to have them covering by more than a touchdown. Get out of here.
Yeah. With Matthew in the chat said it's going to be a sellout in the Coliseum, right? Yes, it was a sellout. Martek says Michigan's played at Oklahoma and Nebraska. Underwood has been tested a bit. Coliseum's a tough place to play, but it's nothing they haven't seen before. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's more just being, it's travel. So with those road environment stuff, yeah, you know, the road environment doesn't matter, but it's the travel that kind of kills you. And it's the traveling from east to west. I think that's going to be more of a challenge for Bryce and the entire Michigan team than, you know, playing at Oklahoma and Nebraska. That's like old hat. You've done that sort of stuff before. It's body clock stuff. And it's easier traveling east to west. I don't consider it a major issue to talk about, but it's all about like not being in your routine more than like anytime you've ever talked to players, like, yeah, it can be a loud environment. And if it's extremely raucous, it can mess up your like snap counts and stuff. And then it has an actual meaningful impact on things. But I've talked to guys who like playing in those environments. Like, yeah, they like it more. It's the travel. It's the getting out of your routine and, you know, not being able to like eat the same thing you usually do and not being able to have the exact same, you know, because a lot of these guys are very routine driven. And if you don't have the same thing, it can, you know, mess you up. But there's some teams that run into the situation where they like their road routine so much, they win, they do better on the road, and then they try to do their road routine at home. You know, they start staying in hotels before the game and all that kind of stuff because they want to have the same routine no matter where they are.
All right. Well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and do questions. Back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back. 1 hour and 8 minutes in, David, just if you need to, where you got to put the podcast ads.
Am I doing that? Aren't you editing this?
No, I'm not editing this.
You're the one who's controlling this thing right now. You can just hit that download button. You see it? When we hit end stream at the end of this, you're just going to have
all you, baby.
You can hit download recordings.
Yes.
It's gonna be magical.
All you. So.
I can't hear you. Sorry.
Yeah. We got to get to some questions. If you're in the chat, thank you. We got like 53 people in the chat right now. That's cool. But we have email questions, and there's a couple I've starred in. I think the first one is Frank in Sacramento. Not a question, but truth. I mean, you don't have to say not a question, Frank, because you don't send questions. But he says, it must be said about the USC Trojans, as was said about many other once proud programs. Quote, they never beat a good football team, even on those occasions when they beat themselves. Frank in Sacramento.
Beautiful, beautiful, Frank. This is from Dylan in Albuquerque. David, serious question. Why didn't the 850 UCLA students who made the trek rush the field? I wanted to see it. I needed to see it. So disappointing it didn't happen. That was Dylan in Albuquerque. The reason is the Rose Bowl, more than any other stadium I've heard of, is extremely particular about fans not getting on the field to the point where they will full-on pepper spray fans. This happened in 2006. When UCLA beat then, what was it, number two USC, 13-9, fans tried to rush the field. Many of my friends were beaten and pepper sprayed by Pasadena PD while trying to get on the field. It is not allowed there. If you saw the videos of some fans getting on the field, like there was a dad and his daughter, one of the security guards tried to tackle his like 8-year-old kid. Like they're nuts. It's stupid, but the Rose Bowl is like that, and it always has been.
Gotcha. All right, this one looks like it's from Doug. Three questions. One, so I guess 3 points here. One, in the first half, UCLA, quote, blew out Penn State.
That's right, baby.
UE. Two, shameless self-aggrandizing on bro article announcing that Sinceri was out and Jerry was in. I posted, imagine we beat Penn State and they carry Jerry off the field one more time. It was not a prediction, just a dream. Some dreams do come true. Three, they made him an offer. He could have easily refused, but Skipper kills. I don't have time to create a new drop for this one. If he beats Ohio State, I will. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Doug. Do it.
I love that he like he just called it out. Like, they're going to beat Penn State and carry Jerry off the field, which they freaking did.
That was so cool. There's actually a good question in the chat right now. Do you see the one from Matthew?
Oh, for that, we got a super chat.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I see that now, too. This is from Matthew Goldsmith. Great stuff as always, guys. If you're Penn State, what do you do with Franklin? You can't fire him right now because he will cost you, I think it was like $40 or $50 million to buy him out.
I think it's 54, yeah.
Yeah. You start lining up the money now because that's going to take some time. And I'm sure it'll decrease with each year, but you will have to fire him. All coaches. Okay. Need to do a little soliloquy rant here.
Okay.
All coaches need to be fired at some point, except for like Nick Saban. But like, if you're a coach, you accept it as part of your job that you're going to need to be fired at some point. Now, the thing is, there's another position in life that is like this. It's called the CEO of a business. And, you know, the major, you know, these major businesses, the reason they have something called a golden parachute is to make it worth it to be one of those jobs. It's understood you're going to need to be fired at some point. When you are, you're going to get this thing, this big buyout package, the whole thing. Coaches do not need that. They do not deserve that. And it is insane because schools cannot afford it. They should buy insurance against their buyouts because it inevitably bankrupts athletic departments and leads to these downstream issues years and years later. UCLA is still trying to deal with having put $12 million to Jim Mora on the books in 2017. And that's small change compared to what James Franklin would cost Penn State. No coach needs this buyout to do their job. They are PE teachers. They can't find another job that will pay them this amount of money. Hold leverage, schools. Hold this. There shouldn't be a salary cap on what you pay players. There should be a salary cap on what you pay coaches. It's insane that they get paid this much money, and it's insane that they get a golden parachute equivalent to, what the CEO of Target might get. Like, it's nuts. This shouldn't be happening. Anyway, stop giving guys these buyouts because it's now the situation where you would like to be able to fire James Franklin at the end of this year, like Penn State, and not because he's bad, not because he's a bad coach. He'll go somewhere else and he'll be fine. Like, he's a good coach, but he's not the coach you need anymore. He's not. He's gotten you to the point of your ceiling, and that's your ceiling with James Franklin. You want to be somewhere else, you need to get rid of that guy. You don't have the flexibility to do it. Why? Because you saddled him with a contract that you only give to Nick Saban after he has won you 5 national titles. You gave him the wrong contract. You gave him that contract when that's not the contract he gets. The contract James Franklin gets is the one that comes with a $12 million buyout. Still enough to set him up for life if he doesn't want to continue to coach. Not enough that it bankrupts your school. Stop being stupid. Stop trying to win PR contests and instead just hire well and make good fiduciary decisions for your schools. Thank you.
I agree. So Franklin has a chance still. We've seen teams lose crappy games. Notre Dame lost. Is that worse than the Penn State lost to UCLA, I mean, last year, and then they went all the way to the national championship game. They could still do it, but
Penn State, no, they're done.
I mean, I think they're done, but there's
no realistic scenario where they make the playoffs.
Yeah. This was the other question you wanted me to put up.
I wanted to answer this one just because I never regret not going to games. This is one where I did. And it's interesting that you brought this up because this is one where I was talking to the other beat writers and not to like actually be in the stands. Like I'm not like that kind of fan guy anymore. Like I don't want to cheer. I don't care. But like this would have been a fun as hell game to just be at and cover and be on the field afterwards, watch Jerry get carried on the field, the whole thing. Like I do regret not being there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for the super chat. We really appreciate it.
This is from John and Brea.
Okay.
The Big Con. Hi, Ryan and Dave. I absolutely loved watching the highest paid college defensive coordinator on the planet fail to figure out how to adjust to the plays a first-time play caller was dialing up or figure out how to stop a running quarterback. And this is just 1 week after watching the second highest paid defensive coordinator fail to figure out how to stop an offensive scheme that was less complicated than a junior high flag football team. I was rooting so hard for Jerry Neuheisel, and I've never rooted hard for anything ending in Neuheisel before in my life. He stuck around UCLA because he obviously loves being there for some reason, and it was cool to see him carried off the field as the 50 or so UCLA students, quote, stormed the field. How much is he paid? My hunch is it's a lot less than a starting defensive lineman. Why are ADs and school presidents such suckers? Danton Lynn, Jim Knowles, James Franklin, Bill Belichick, Chip Kelly, Luke Fickell, Clay Helton, Lincoln Riley, Jimbo Fisher, on and on. 10-year contracts, $50 million. Dude, John Abrea and I are like this. 10-year contracts, $50 million buyouts. What the fuck is happening? Sorry, Griffin. James Franklin should be fired, not because he lost to UCLA, but because he blatantly doesn't even attempt to do his job this week. Jerry Neuheisel aside, is being a college football coach the biggest scam since Theranos? Go Bruins, John and Brea.
Thanks, John.
I think it is. I think it's a huge scam. I think there's a big bubble. And I think it's like it's not having an effect on higher ed. Like it's not having an effect on these universities that they keep having to pay insane buyouts because their presidents and their ADs are idiots who keep giving out these insane buyouts.
Yeah.
The coaches don't have global leverage. They don't. They have incremental leverage. But if these schools all just like, I'm not even talking about collusion. If you all just understood the situation, this isn't like some zero-sum thing. Most coaches, like most of the people who are eligible for your coaching job, they can do a fine job. They're not going to be great. They're not going to be awful. They'll be fine. There's some that'll be good. There's some that'll be bad. But most of them are like in the middle somewhere and they'll be fine. If that's true, if you accept that as truth, that there isn't just like one perfect fit and that's the only guy that'll work. And nobody thinks that about James Franklin. I like James Franklin. I think he's a decent enough coach. I think he's kind of dumb, and I don't think he's very good at the math of head coaching, but I think he's a good program manager, whatever you want to call it. But James Franklin was not the only one who could work for Penn State, and you gave him a contract of, you're the only one who can work here. You're the only option for us. And that's not the case. Penn State, it's a good job. A lot of people can do well there. Like a lot of people. There are probably 10 G5 coaches you could think up off the top of your head right now who would do a good job, at least as good as James Franklin there tomorrow. You don't need to give James Franklin a $50 million buyout. Don't do that until he's won 5 national titles. Until he has Nick Saban to you, you do not need to give him a Nick Saban contract.
Yeah. We got a voicemail. And are you impressed? Like, away from home, and I got this working here. Like, this is pretty impressive.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. My question this week is for Ryan. Both of you can definitely give an opinion on it. It's just that the topic would be future scheduling and logistics, and I know that's a topic Ryan is passionate about and Dave is not. And I'd also like to be clear to you guys and the listeners, I am not an Ohio State fan complaining in this scenario. This is just an observation based on things that you guys have mentioned in the past. On Ohio State's 2027 schedule, they play Alabama in the non-conference, and then they're scheduled to play at Michigan, I believe at Oregon, and then they have USC, Penn State, and they might have Indiana. I get it. You want to schedule the best games, best teams. Totally understand it. But I remember you guys talking about how the Pac-12 would always set themselves up in a bad scenario to get teams in the playoffs by, you know, not giving Oregon and Washington a bye before they played each other, or having, you know, just a weird Friday night game for no reason, just different scenarios. And so I'm wondering if, you know, I would think based on the Big Ten, you want to get your best teams the best chance to get into the playoff. I think USC in either 2027 or 2026 is in this scenario as well, based on how their schedule shakes out. You think the Big Ten needs to kind of factor in with some of these future non-conference games? Like, hey, if somebody has a marquee game like in Alabama or whatever, then let's maybe ease up on how many of the bigger opponents we have them play in the conference schedule, because we want to get four or five teams in if we can. Curious if that gives you guys vibes back to the Larry Scott scheduling of Pac-12, or if we just need to shut up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Perk. Appreciate it. I think what the Pac-12 would do, if it was like Oregon, Washington, and Stanford were all good, they would make it so like when
they
Oregon
have to played play Washington, each other twice.
No, they would be like when Oregon played Washington, they'd give like Washington a huge advantage, so Oregon would lose. But then when Washington played Stanford, they'd give Stanford a huge advantage, so like Washington would lose that one. And then when Stanford played Oregon, they'd give Oregon a huge advantage, so Stanford would lose that one. And it would be like you would just sort of screw everybody. I think with this kind of thing, you just have to, I think part of it is why they want the automatic qualifier so that the out of conference stuff doesn't matter. But I don't know if that's going to come into consideration. I think your opponents are picked, and you know, maybe they could do like some home road stuff or just order knowing that you had a big game. But I don't think you can manipulate too much based on out of conference schedule. I think you just try to make it even and just don't put anyone at obviously disadvantages. Like I think Dan Lanning was complaining that like a bunch of the teams that they play have extra rest when Oregon plays them, you know. Oregon, Dan Lanning complains too, David. And I think he quoted the wrong number, but you know, just don't put teams, especially your best teams, at disadvantages and you'll be okay.
Well, Dan Lanning doesn't lose after he whines.
No, he wins after, but he still whines. Like the whining is not unique.
Whining is fine. It's just don't just be a big whiner every time you lose. Both during the game, after the game, before the game, hey, and then a week later. You know what I mean?
Hey, what's up?
Sorry.
Hey, what's up? It's Burke. Yeah, I agree with you. I will say, I do think you will start to see some consideration like that. I think it's quote unquote smart for the conferences to do this. So I think they will try to manipulate schedules to account for that sort of thing. I think it's hard. Because a lot of times teams that you think are going to be good preseason, especially if you're not like super well versed in them, and even if you are, they sometimes fall flat on their face. So say Wisconsin was given some special consideration for Alabama this year, but then Alabama turned out to be 6-6 Alabama. You know, then what are you doing?
Right.
So I think there's some, you know, but I think if you do end up with a team like Oregon scheduling like a couple of like big time, you know, non-conference opponents, I think they will start to adjust for that, because we live in a very stupid world where the playoff is the only thing that matters to anybody ever, ever again.
All right. Next, we got Oxnard Steve. What are the chances that Penn State fires James Franklin after back-to-back losses to former Pac-12 teams, including
ferocious
UCLA? And would it not be ironic if UCLA then hired Franklin and their new head coach, knowing that their program could never attract any high-profile candidates? Keep it mediocre, guys, just like the Nittany Lions.
I don't think they can. I don't know Penn State's financial situation that well, but I don't think they have $54 million just lying around to pay him off. So unless they found cause, I don't think they can this year. I think they. Yeah. I think if I'm them, you start drumming up the money because you're going to need it at some point, but can't do it yet.
No.
All right. Next up, we've got Matthew with an actual question. Matthew from Mountain View. General manager org charts and other stuff. Hello, gents. Dave, last week when you discussed to whom a football general manager should be reporting, you argued that if the athletic director doesn't have oversight of football, then you might as well just fire him. I agree with you. As an example, you cited Andrew Luck reporting to Bernard something or other. It's Muir. As it turns out, when Luck was hired last December, he was reporting directly to the university president, not to Muir, which is why absolutely no one was surprised when Muir, quote, stepped down in February. As of last month, Stanford has a new athletic director, John Donahoe, the former CEO of Nike, and Luck is now reporting to him, which makes more sense. I think so, Matthew, as is always the case with me, I think I just compressed all of that information into a single incorrect factoid, but I remembered that Andrew Luck was now reporting to the AD. I just couldn't remember who that guy was. Side note, what are your thoughts about hiring sports adjacent business executives as athletic directors in this current environment? I'm probably supportive of it. I kind of hate it. As for UCLA, I know Dave was rooting for 0-12, but now that there's a win on the board, I assume you're now rooting for a bowl game with your newly unstoppable offense that was installed in 3 days. And what does this say about future job prospects for Tino Sinceri? This had to be his worst case scenario, right? Yeah, I'm not, I don't think they're getting a bowl game. But I think at this point you can, I think people can relax and just be like, whatever, whatever happens right. is fine. And
it's
I think
transition year and you got a huge win.
It's fun. It's fun. Yeah. Everything is gravy at this point.
You're on like Survivor and you killed like a big, you know, wildebeest yeah. or something. You're eating the rest of the show. Like even if you get eliminated, like you got a full belly, you're good.
Nothing good about Pacino Sinceri. This doesn't say anything good about him. I think you're right. So, and then finally, what would you do if Rick Neuheisel offered to return as head coach with the stipulation that hiring him back was the only circumstance in which Jerry Neuheisel also returned? I would be looking for bleach.
Wait, you were going to hire him last week.
I would hire him to go golfing with donors.
Okay. If you didn't know who wrote this and it said, Dave, last week when you discussed to whom a football general manager should be reporting, like you kind of knew who this would be, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The way it was worded.
To whom? Stanford grad. Get out of here.
Yeah. All right. This is Dustin. Martin Jarmon's hot board. Now that UCLA has more victories in the Big Ten than Penn State, please rate who Martin Jarmon would pick as a replacement for Deshaun Foster as UCLA head coach on a scale of 1 to 5
Martinis.
If left to his own devices.
Martinis.
Oh, sorry. This is small. I need to make this bigger, especially because I'm sitting further away. That's weird. There seems to be something wrong with my keyboard putting random eyes at the end of some words, and I seem to be having issues with my backspace and delete buttons too. Okay. I'm sure he's learned from his lessons and would focus on candidates with head coaching experience of success as a coordinator. Anyway, question for Dave. Oh, wait. So he didn't put anybody there. Was that the joke?
What?
He didn't put any names.
The list is coming.
Oh, is it coming?
Yeah.
If you're going to say a list, put a list. Now you're going to.
I don't know what's going on with you in reading this email, but I can see the whole list right here on my screen.
I'm sure he's learned from his lessons and would focus on candidates with head coaching experience or success as a coordinator. Anyway, question for Dave. So he's giving a list, but then he puts a question in between. So why is that? Yeah,
but he's giving the question. He's saying the question. The question is coming after that comma.
He already stated the question.
Please rate the. I'm gonna finish reading this email. You're driving me.
I'm over this email, Dustin.
Please rate the following Deshaun Foster replacements on a scale of 1 to 5 martinis. There it is again. Weird. Deshaun Foster has had coaching experience. I will give that a.
But he already put that part.
Okay. Okay.
1 to 5 martinis.
Is the 5 martinis the more likely or less likely? That's the question.
Yes. Again, dumb.
Tough. Deshaun Foster. I'm gonna put that as a 2 martini. Chip Kelly, head coaching and coordinator experience, and I'm sure would be a great recruiter given his last stop in college was at Ohio State. Well, that would give him continuity, you know? So I got to go 3 or 4 martinis there. Jerry Neuheisel, OC experience, high-powered offense, averaging 42 points per game. This feels like a 4, maybe a 5.
Okay.
Rick Neuheisel, head coaching experience, will provide with gloves. I think that's a 3. And Tim Skipper, head coaching experience, that's the obvious 5 here. Ryan, please rank the above based on how they would fit at USC when Lincoln Riley goes 7-5. Are there any obvious UCLA candidates I missed? All right, so you just rank them by how would they fit at USC?
I'm not doing this.
Okay, fine.
I'm over Dustin's email. Sorry,
you're done with this email.
Word it better.
Right, I'm going to read James Hunter's while you take a break from reading.
Yes.
Curious about your – I just said his last name. Sorry, James. Curious about your lacrosse coach – oh, wait, no, this is not an actual question. Sorry, James. I'll read Griffin update. Paul Webfoot. This isn't really for Dave and Ryan, but for a couple of listeners. Can we get an update from Griffin or his dad? Years have passed since the original 2 fucks. Sorry, Griffin. Rule was announced. Do they still listen to the pod? Has Griffin's fuck allowance? Sorry, Griffin. Increased? We need an update. For Ryan and Dave, even if Griffin doesn't listen anymore or the allowance has been expanded, please stay committed to the bit. With love, Paul Webfoot.
Sure.
Yeah, we definitely need. I was thinking if we ever do merch, I would think the quote actually is just sorry, Griffin.
Yes.
And then Pac-12 podcast on the back. Who would buy that shirt? Would somebody buy a Ashari Griffin?
Yeah, more homes in the Pac-12 Network, or still in more homes in the Pac-12 Network. We are the podcast of champions.
That would be the other one. Like, would that be the slogan on the back, and then "Sorry Griffin" on the front?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Funny. I think like four people would buy them, and two of them would be us.
And they would love them though.
Yeah, they would love the
hell UCLA out of them. Coaching carousel from Coach B in New York. Hey guys, sorry it took so long. Took a long time to respond to send this email. I've been pretty busy losing all these football games, zero sum game. I am doing my part. Poor Coach B just doesn't win a lot of games.
No.
The UCLA 2024 recruitment and selection guide states, if the position is a career or a contract appointment, it must be posted to the UCLA Career Opportunities website in accordance with UCLA policies and collective bargaining agreements 2024. Additionally, it says, it needs to be posted within 3 business days. This seems like a football contract would fall under this guideline. Since the position is not posted currently on jobs.ucla.edu, does that mean UCLA has hired someone? If they have not hired someone, then my second question, David, can I list you as a reference? Anyway, fight on or whatever. I've got a game plan to not build. Peace, Coach B in New York.
Love it. I don't know. They can probably get around that by just saying they have an interim head coach, probably. But yes, absolutely. Coach B, you are my new pick to be the head coach for UCLA football.
Oh, he has an actual question too.
Oh, does he?
P.S. My actual question, is Jonathan Smith being considered? Also, would they consider a successful FCS guy with FBS coordinator experience, specifically Tim Plow of UC Davis?
I think UCLA still at this point is still figuring out exactly how much they'll have to spend on a head coach. So I think it's early to say anybody's being considered. But Jonathan Smith makes logical sense, and his buyout weirdly got mitigated by them firing their AD. So I think he's only owed like $4 million if he leaves.
And then his PPS, for the record, that dude won't give me a job. And that nettles my jammies. Bro went to the same high school and college as me. What the heck?
What the hell?
There's like some weird stuff going on. At the hour and a half mark, I'm not sure what's going on here.
I don't know either. This is from Kevin. Rough weeks. A good friend and UCLA supporter said this to me after the Penn State victory. Good teams win, great teams cover. Of course. He reminded me as a USC fan that good teams win, great teams cover, and USC loses to a team that got blown out the week before by 53 points. Ouch. One, what are the chances that this is the only win UCLA has this season? I'm going to say they got another win in them somewhere. I'm not sure where.
I'm going to only give it like 15%.
Yeah, I think they've got another win in them. Two, and it is still a better victory than USC. And is it still a better victory than USC will have all this season?
I mean, very possible. But USC does have some opportunities because they have Oregon and Notre Dame on the road. So if they win either one of those games, that's better. But
yeah, and if we're talking about at the time of victory too, like, because right now Penn State's unranked and they might finish the year like 7-5, 8-4. Who knows?
But it was still a top 10 team when you played them.
Yeah, so it's tough. But I'm going to say yes.
And I think UCLA in general, and I said this on my USC podcast, like if you look at the 4 former Pac-12 teams, Oregon has a home win against Ohio State, a road win against Penn State, like big wins. Like those are like massive wins. UCLA beat Nebraska on the road last year. They beat Iowa at home, I believe, and then just beat Penn State at home. You know, some quality wins. Washington beat Michigan last year at home. They just beat Maryland on the road, which is not easy for teams on the West Coast to do. USC's best Big Ten win is like Nebraska at home last year. Like that's it. So they need a big win. They don't have UCLA has better Big Ten wins than USC does at this point. Yep. So, all right. Last one, it looks like. Maximus Decimus Meridius. Okay, mm-hmm. This is a text message. Dear Ryan and Dave, I want your opinion on the Bill Belichick situation. Reports are that there are recruiting violations, the coaches not talking to the kids, and that UNC is looking for an exit strategy. What went wrong? Will we ever see the Hulu footage? Is this the end of Bill's 73-year-old formicating extravaganza?
Fornicating,
sorry. Oh, my God. I need to make this bigger. Holy shit. Reports are he's looking for a landing spot on another team. Is UCLA interested by chance? Does any college team take a chance on hiring him?
No, he's never getting another coaching job in college for sure. Maybe not ever anywhere.
He shouldn't coach anymore. He shouldn't be coaching.
He should be retired. There's going to be some very odd stuff that comes out about this afterwards. There's already been some odd stuff about it. Obviously, Pablo Torre had a bunch of good stuff on his podcast about it before the season even started. He's looking to get out reportedly now, looking to pay his $1 million buyout just to get the heck out of there, or maybe negotiate a limited buyout. It sounds like it's a disaster nightmare, and I hope we see the footage, but I wouldn't say it's predictable that it was going to be this, but look, like, hiring old NFL guy to be your college coach is, that's been tried, and it almost never works. This is insane decision making from UNC.
Yeah. I think Cowherd was talking about it. Like, he just hired his like friends and family and stuff and was more concerned about his stuff than like making UNC better. The fact that Drake May is playing well and he won't say anything that has to do with the Patriots because of his own issues with Robert Kraft, where you should be celebrating UNC graduate Drake May, like, but because he's with the Patriots, like, they're not saying anything about it. Like, stuff like that is so dumb and petty. The 25-year-old girlfriend, like, everything just seems like this is bad.
Yeah.
I think The Athletic did a piece on him where they interviewed like group of six head coaches, and they're like, we knew it was a problem when we were losing guys to North Carolina. And it's like, we shouldn't be losing recruiting battles to North Carolina because they shouldn't be recruiting the guys we're recruiting. They're in the freaking ACC. So to them, that was like, that's a big problem.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Couple questions from the chat. Who will Wisconsin hire from It's Me 209? Luke Fickell's going to be gone. I don't know. That's down.
What's Luke Fickell's buyout?
I'm not sure.
Let's look up old Lukey's buyout. Calls for him to be owed 80% of what's remaining on his deal.
Dang.
What is remaining on his deal? $25 million? What are we doing here?
You gotta do it. It's not working.
I mean, you got to do it. With whose $25 million? Matthew, chime in. Is there like a well-heeled Wisconsin booster who can come up with $25 million at the end of the season to bail out this AD on another bad contract?
Stanford just got a $50 million like
donation. It's Stanford. They sold their souls to high finance many years ago.
Yeah. Nice. We'll see. That's for down the road. And then last one, Mark. Worst loss, number one, USC versus Stanford in 2007 or Penn State? Oh,
Stanford. Come on. No. That
was a 41-point.
Yeah, dude. That game was first. Before I was like an irony poisoned old head, I was like 20. What was that? I was 22 watching that game, and I believe the Rose Bowl press box. And I was sitting there and I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Tavita Pritchard out there barely knows how to throw a football and just beating the brakes off of USC. That was so funny. Nothing will ever compare.
And he got like a 12-year gig out of being the offensive coordinator. They should have been.
Here's the thing about the UCLA-Penn State game, and I should have said this earlier, but like, UCLA is a much worse team. They've got much less talent. They had the most talented player on the field. Like, the most talented player on the field was playing for UCLA in that game, and that's Nico Iamaliava. Like, when you've got a guy like that, it can be an X factor, and he really was in that game.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it.
That was beautiful. I enjoyed that show.
It was fun. I'm tired. I'm sitting in this weird chair for a long time. But we got it to work. The board worked. I'm very happy. Hopefully back in studio next week, so won't have to do this again.
Excellent.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.